From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo's tax commission releases its recommendations. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the report, and education advocates mark a national day of action. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo's tax commission is recommending a $2 billion package that includes a temporary freeze on property taxes and a cut in corporate taxes to a 40-year low. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Cuomo's tax commission is recommending a $1 billion reduction in property taxes, including a temporary halt to local government and school tax increases, as well as a decrease in the corporate tax rate. The commission also wants to increase the threshold for the estate tax from the present $1 million to over $5 million. The governor, while not committing to specific recommendations now, says much of it is possible.
It's good news that the state is in the position to contemplate tax cuts.
The plan would freeze all present property tax rates if local governments and schools cooperate for 2 years. The municipalities and school districts would then get a 2% increase in cash each year from the state. Some property taxpayers would even get a rebate on their taxes through what's known as a circuit breaker if their taxes are determined to be too high for their income level. Tax Commission co-chair, former Governor George Pataki, says taxpayers would finally be getting some relief.
They're not going to see an increase in any of their property taxes. This is a positive step.
Pataki, a Republican, had wanted the commission to recommend reducing the state's income tax, but he says he's now satisfied that a temporary tax surcharge on the wealthy will expire as planned in 5 years. The other co-chair, former state controller Carl McCall, a Democrat, chided local governments and schools for what he says is a continued high rate of spending. He says that's contributed to the state's highest in the nation property taxes.
All of the various levels of government have to find ways of working together, sharing services, and finding ways of reducing the kind of burden that has been imposed on our citizens.
Ron Deutsch, with the progressive-leaning New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness, had been pressing for the circuit breaker as a way to ease the property tax bills of New Yorkers who can least afford to pay. He says it sounds good, but he'd like to hear more specifics.
The devil is always in the details when you're talking about a circuit breaker. So really what a circuit breaker is going to do, it's going to limit the amount of property taxes you pay based on your income level. So if your income level is lower, then you shouldn't pay a huge amount of your income in property taxes like many families are in New York State right now.
Deutsch is not a supporter of the business tax cuts. He says studies have shown that millions of dollars in state tax credits given to businesses have not improved the economy or created jobs. He recommends eliminating what critics have called corporate welfare instead. And he says upping the threshold on the estate tax is a huge giveaway to the wealthy. Business groups disagree. The state's business council says the estate tax changes would help small businesses and farmers, and reductions in corporate taxes would benefit industries who've made a significant commitment to New York. E.J. McMahon, with the Empire Center, a fiscally conservative think tank, is also pleased with the business tax cut recommendations, which include a swifter phase-out of an energy tax surcharge. But he says overall, the tax cuts are not the game changer that New York needs. And he says the temporary property tax freeze would actually provide very little real economic benefit.
It's not aimed at jumpstarting the economy or promoting economic competitiveness. It's aimed at achieving a desired political result.
2014 is an election year for Cuomo and all members of the legislature. McMahon says a 2% per year property tax cap enacted 2 years ago is already working. And he says the real way to get property taxes down is to reduce unfunded mandates and other costly rules and regulations for schools and local governments. One unanswered question is how to pay for the $2 billion in new tax cuts. The state already faces a projected $1.7 billion structural deficit. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, Governor Cuomo's tax commission released its report. Already reaction from the state assembly and Speaker Silver, who says he's for property tax cut, but not at the expense of school spending. Sounds like somewhat of a fight on the way.
Well, I don't have any doubt about it. You know that the assembly, who are the more progressive house, of course, have been trying for years to have a system where if you don't have a lot of money, you pay less in property taxes or in other taxes, and they call that a circuit breaker. And it's always been a non-starter. But when the tax commission made up of ex-governor Pataki and his colleague who he ran against, Carl McCall, when he had been the controller, came up with this package, included in it was this circuit breaker idea. So, of course, Silver likes that. On the other hand, Silver knows that the unions and the schools and the others are depending on him to make sure that the necessary money to run government is there. The rhetoric, of course, from the other house, from the upper house, the Republicans, is always cut taxes and make taxes a better deal for people. So the usual head-to-head will come out of this, and in the end, there will probably be some movement. I'm going to tell you why. If you own a small house on Long Island and you're paying $20,000 or $25,000 in taxes, by any objective measure, it's just too much. I mean, it's too much. No matter what your democratic principles are or no matter what you believe, it is too much. So there are ways out of this. One of the ways, of course, is to let the schools get paid for by the general tax revenues. In other words, let the state pay for the schools, and then you don't pay, then each community doesn't have to come up with these obscene taxes that they're putting on people. This has been around for a while, this idea. It has really gone nowhere. I am sure that Andrew Cuomo, who is arguing that all taxes ought to be cut at the state level, is not for assuming more debt for the state to pay. So I think it'll be much ado about nothing. Cuomo has the issue, as he always does, whether or not he gets any results. And some people say whether he really wants results is another whole story.
Let's stay with issue and results. Senator Liz Krueger from the Upper East Side in Manhattan, a Democrat, has been putting in a bill to legalize recreational marijuana in New York. Alan, she says, let's legalize pot for recreational use as well. It solves a host of problems.
Well, there are states that are doing this, and then there are one Latin American country, Uruguay, has done exactly that. Look, we all know that there are some real inequities in the way this is done. A guy smokes pot on the 16th floor on Fifth Avenue, the cops are not likely to pick him up. If somebody is smoking weed on, the street on Broadway or driving a car with weed in the car, they are much more likely to get picked up. We know this. There's no two ways about it. It isn't that white people and richer people smoke less pot. It's that they're not in a position to get caught. Liz Krueger is a very good woman, and she has always done what she considers to be the right thing. So I hear what she's saying. On the other hand, there are marijuana experts. I interview one of them on a regular basis here on public radio, who will tell you that there's no two ways about it, that marijuana can be a gateway drug to other drugs. And so you have to be careful. On the other hand, still, we know what happened when we outlawed liquor in this country, And we created an illegal industry, obviously. That's what led to the work of the mafia. That's what led to all of the other folks who got so much out of illegal liquor. When we got rid of it, at least we could legalize it. At least we could tax it. So that's the elements of the debate.
There's another debate going on in New York City, and a decision is made, and that is Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio has decided to move into the mansion. That's Gracie Mansion. Is this a big deal?
No. Mike Bloomberg, the outgoing mayor, lived in his fancy digs on the East Side. The new mayor, who, of course, doesn't have the same kind of money, has decided not to move out of Brooklyn. Now, what's the deal? The deal is that he has always been seen as an outsider, a guy who, you know, is not one of those people who are inside government forever. And he liked that. That's why he was the public advocate, so-called the people's representative. So when you move from your digs in Brooklyn, which aren't that fancy, into Gracie Mansion, which is on the East Side, you are in some way giving up some of your bragging rights. On the other hand, who really cares where the guy lives? Gracie Mansion can function as it has in the last several years as a place where you have conferences and you bring people. Newspapers abhor a vacuum, and they're going to make as much out of this as they possibly can, but it's a bunch of nonsense.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week marked a nationwide day of action around issues plaguing public education. Teachers, parents, union leaders, and even some school superintendents and board members in New York were clothed in blue to show their concern for what they see as an overemphasis on testing, an underemphasis on state education funding, and an inequitable spending between districts. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
New York's wide-ranging day-long events are part of a national day of action coordinated by the American Federation of Teachers, the National Education Association, and more than 100 community groups and other organizations. They say they aim to reclaim the promise of public education from corporate interests and self-proclaimed education reformers. The itinerary includes rallies, press events, meetings with and communications to the Board of Regents and legislators. Billy Easton is executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education.
What we've seen in the last several years in New York State and across the country is a corporate-style effort to take over our public schools that includes a lot of emphasis on privatization and testing and, frankly, a defunding of our classrooms. And we're today demanding that we reclaim the promise of education, that New York State stops the obsession with testing and fully and adequately funds our schools.
Capital Region organizer for Citizen Action of New York, Mark Emanation, says the coalition of groups is calling for a 3-year moratorium on high-stakes testing so that teachers and students can be brought up to speed on Common Core.
There's lots of nationwide attacks on public education, the closing of the 27 schools in Philadelphia, the closing of the 51 schools in Chicago. Right now, Niskayuna is discussing the closing of the school, the Niskayuna School District. Schenectady had to close a school last year. Troy had to close a school the year before. There we have an increase in classroom sizes. We're looking for more funding, fair funding, so the poorer schools get it, an end to these high-stakes testings for 3 years, and more emphasis on teaching and learning rather than testing.
Emanation says test results should not be viewed as a death penalty for any given school. Day of Action events are highlighting solutions aimed at ensuring that every child in New York State receives a high-quality public education from pre-K through college. Leaders have launched an open letter to the Board of Regents urging them to accelerate support to schools and make the course corrections necessary to ensure the Common Core standards are implemented properly. A spokesman for the New York State Education Department said it had no comment on the day's activities. And there's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
A New York environmental group says the use of fracking waste on some of the state's roads is occurring more than initially thought. The state agency that regulates the use of fracking brine says it ensures the waste does not have high concentrations of pollutants. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Kate Hudson is Watershed Program Director for environmental group Riverkeeper. She says she found information about the use of fracking waste to de-ice some of New York's roads while working with local groups in Westchester, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, and Albany counties to ban the use and disposal of fracking waste. She says while advocating for county-level bans,
we stumbled on the fact that the brine spreading was occurring and that this was something that you know, we thought it was occurring. We did not know the extent to which it was occurring.
She adds,
people in New York should not be lulled into a sense of, well, we're not facing the risk of fracking right now because fracking isn't being allowed in New York.
New York has a moratorium on high-volume hydraulic fracturing and is awaiting Governor Andrew Cuomo's decision on whether to ban the method of extracting natural gas from shale formations. A spokesman for the governor recently said the matter is under review by the State Department of Environmental Conservation and State Department of Health with no set timeline for a decision. Again, here's Riverkeepers Hudson on fracking waste for road de-icing.
This is an activity that is related to low volume vertical well fracking waste, which is being generated by fracking activity in both New York and Pennsylvania in low volume wells. That fracking activity is already allowed.
It's up to the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to approve the use of fracking brine for roads in the state. And Riverkeeper, through the Freedom of Information Law, requested documents pertaining to such approvals. Hudson explains that those who want to use the waste as a de-icer have to apply to DEC for a beneficial use determination, or BUD.
So we foiled DEC for all of the beneficial use determinations they had issued in the last 2 years for the use of fracking brine on state, county, or local roads.
She says amid the 500 pages or so in return, here's what she found.
There are BUD approvals being given by DEC for the spreading of brine from fracked wells. And also, we found out, which was not initially on our radar screen, brine from gas storage facilities. And that there are 30 BUDs that have been approved over the last 2 years for brine from those two sources to be used in 26 municipalities in six New York counties.
County, she says, in the southern tier and western portion of the state. A DEC spokeswoman says the agency currently issues beneficial use determinations for production brine from primarily non-shale vertical oil and gas wells and brine from solution-mined salt caverns. She says under a BUD, designated road spreading locations must avoid environmental impacts to sensitive locations such as state forest areas, wetlands, and surface water bodies. When New York State Senator Terry Gibson heard about Riverkeeper's report, he renewed his call for legislation he introduced earlier this year.
We have a bill in committee right now that would ban the use of fracking wastewater as a de-icer in New York State. And we hope that my colleagues will see that this activity actually is occurring here in New York State.
His bill has three co-sponsors, all fellow Democrats. Hudson points to concerns about high levels of salinity and low levels of two chemicals. The DEC spokeswoman, in reference to Riverkeeper's blog on fracking waste, says in a statement, if excessive levels of petroleum-related volatile contaminants, such as benzene and toluene, are found, DEC will deny a beneficial use request. The statement also says that high levels of sodium chloride and/or calcium chloride are expected and are, in fact, required for the brine to be useful for road de-icing or road stabilization. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Eight Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states, including New York, filed a petition with the Environmental Protection Agency this week seeking to force nine other states to reduce their air pollution. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley joined a conference call with the governors filing the petition.
Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont filed the Clean Air Act petition. The Northeast states are seeking to have 9 states in the Midwest and South be added to the ozone transport region. Connecticut is spearheading the effort for the states. Department of Energy and Environmental Protection Commissioner Dan Esty explains that under that Clean Air Act provision, states included in the region must limit air pollution consistent with the efforts of downwind states.
The petition seeks to have these states brought into the ozone transport region, and by doing that would require the upwind states to step up to the best practices that have been adopted by those states that are already in the region.
Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy notes that much of the pollution in his state comes from outside its borders.
It is fundamentally unfair for the people of Indiana or Ohio or elsewhere to send their dirty air to my state and then expect that somehow, some way, I'm going to make the environment cleaner in Connecticut for our citizens. And it is certainly time for the EPA to bring them into the same obligations that we've been living under for many, many years.
Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin says it's time for upwind states to adopt the same mandatory standards because their pollution is impacting his state's environment and public health.
We're sick and tired of being the tailpipe to the polluters to our west and to our south.
New Hampshire Governor Margaret Hassan notes that her state receives more than 95% of its pollution from upwind states. She says those states must be held accountable by being brought into the ozone transport region.
It's really about the disproportionate efforts that our states would now need to do to improve things when, in fact, our upwind states could do some very fundamental things at much lower cost.
The Midwest Ozone Group is an association of primarily large coal-fired electric utilities in the Midwest that focuses on ozone science and transport. Government Relations Committee Chair, Attorney Gene Trisco, says they contract with an international independent consulting firm to assess emissions, which found that between 1999 and 2011, nitrogen oxide emissions from power plants was reduced in the Northeast 54%, the Midwest 71%, and the Southeast 75%.
So I don't think it's fair to say that the Midwest and Southern states have not been doing their fair share in terms of reducing emissions from coal-based power plants.
Delaware Governor Jack Markell notes that his state replaced 9 coal-fired power plants with natural gas, and another installed hundreds of millions of dollars in emissions equipment to make it one of the cleanest plants in the country.
We are now at the point where we could shut off every source of emissions in Delaware, and oftentimes not meet the standards. Somebody else is going to have to take some action.
But Gene Trisco says the Northeast fails to meet attainment due to vehicle emissions, primarily along the I-95 corridor.
Alpine geophysics modeling shows that the largest source of emissions contributing to ozone in the Northeast and elsewhere is mobile sources, not coal-fired power plants.
All of the states filing the petition are led by Democratic governors. The petition targets Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, and West Virginia. The EPA is required to approve or disapprove the petition within 18 months.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1350. Or just listen to podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.